greatest symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Top guys, top gals, and everyone in between, welcome to another special ad-free shows event. I, of course, am John Alba, and for the first time, I'm very excited about this. I'm laying down some audible chocolate with Real Double J himself, Jeff Jarrett, the star of my world here on the Ad-Free Shows Network. Jeff, how are you today, man?
Did you say audible chocolate?
Audible chocolate, baby. It's the easy way to consume it. Nice, sweet. Everyone loves a nice little sweet.
No, Brad, I guess we're taking our maiden voyage here, but we've obviously been buds and talk wrestling and all kinds of things, some sports and NASCAR and Orlando and Florida and independent wrestling and the Northeast and my Titans and Super Bowl bound Titans. And you're stinking. No, are you a Jets or Giants?
So I grew up a Giants fan. But yes, seriously. But you know, I got my two big wins in the last 15 years, so I'm okay with that.
Of course, I'm all right with that. The Southern boy at the helm, so we'll just leave it at that.
And look, I got to cover Tom Brady for the past 5-6 years, so I'm okay with that at the end of the day. I got everything out. But I'm really excited to be laying down some content with you here on Ad Free Shows, especially this special event, because this is a complimentary piece to, so far, one of my favorite things that I've seen on Ad Free Shows, the conversations with Conrad, with your father, Jerry Jarrett. Part one dropped a few weeks ago, and we're getting ready to load off part two. And there's just so much ground to cover with Memphis. It's such a wide array of content, but we're going to condense it down a little bit here and talk to someone who was there firsthand in yourself and try to bridge that gap between what made Memphis so special then and what makes it still special today. And part one of our conversation here, Jeff, is going to be about the modern day legacy of Memphis wrestling in today's standard. So you're someone who's very much in tune with pro wrestling today. And Memphis, I think, laid the groundwork for many of the innovations that we see, from all these crazy stipulations to special types of matches. Where do you personally see the influence of Memphis wrestling in today's product?
Whew, that's a loaded question, because I'm biased coming from the area. And a lot of people like to refer to it as Memphis or Tennessee. Back in the day, it was the guys from Tennessee. It wasn't actually Memphis. But anyway, it's evolved through the years. And John, one of the things that always jumped off the page at me as I guess, 93 is when I first went to the WWF. And so that's when, you know, and I'd gone to Puerto Rico and Japan and even Texas. But when you take the territory days before cable television and you split up North America into 22 different regional promotions, I believe most, if not all, the business model was relatively the same, that it was all a live event driven business. But like the North, you know, Vince's old territory, his father, they ran the Garden monthly at the very most. They ran Pittsburgh monthly. They ran the big markets. They weren't weekly towns. Tampa, you know, different territories had different models. But in Tennessee, obviously a much less populated. So with less population, candidly, you know, we didn't have as big a base to draw from. And sure, so the economic situation of people that come in and, you know, make the most money, up, you know, as far as the territory traveling, you know, up north was where the most money was made. The Crockett's had a good run in the early 80s, but that kind of discussion always sort of fascinated me, because in Tennessee, we ran Memphis every Monday night, Louisville every Tuesday, Evansville into Wednesday, Saturday every Nashville. So 4 out of the 7 nights were weekly towns. And so people had standing reservations. And so we wrestled in front of a group of people. And obviously there were people that didn't make it every week, but for the most part, we assumed that most people knew what happened the previous week. So by design, we were weekly episodic programming, and it was sort of ingrained and built in. And so I would wrestle an opponent, and I may wrestle him 6 weeks in a row. So you can't have the same match in Memphis for 6 weeks in a row. You had to evolve it and the stipulations. But that being sort of my, if you will, my education from kindergarten all the way up through as high as college you want to go, 8 years, become a doctor, whatever it is, that was built around weekly episodic television and storyline driven. Well, look where we're at today.
Yeah.
Raw every Monday. And, you know, and I know it started in the early 90s, but a lot of people in the territories, they were built on monthly programming and sometimes even the big show every other month. So a weekly episodic ingrained is something that was our tried and true. And so that was a gift for me. I've always thought, what are we saying next week on Raw? What are we saying next week on SmackDown or Impact or whatever it is? So that weekly episodic is something that you know, in the Tennessee area, we did for years, and that's how we made our bread and butter, is that weekly episodic.
And you can peel back the layers even further and look deeper in terms of, say, match stipulations. Your father was talking in the conversation with Conrad about the scaffold stuff, and instantly in my head, I was like, well, we have so many high-stakes matches like Money in the Bank in today's game, and I wonder where you draw inspiration from that. And then you and I were talking off-air about your famous feud with the Moondogs, the 1992 PW Feud of the Year, you and Jerry Lawler against them, concession stand brawl, $5,000 match. That's kind of predating hardcore wrestling, right before ECW and similar promotions are about to take off.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes without saying. We did, you know, and I wasn't physically a part of it, but the concession stand brawl in the 70s was a precursor for sure to hardcore wrestling.
Right.
And then the Moondogs in 91, 92, me and Lawler, and I had a bunch of different partners, but me and the Moondogs, trash cans, boards, chairs, you know, just a real chaotic scene, which was exactly what ECW did in a lot of ways. But there was all different, you know, you mentioned the scaffold match. Also, we would have matches to determine the number one contender. Not that other territories didn't do that, but we had to not just have wrestler A versus wrestler B with no stakes, because any storyline, any television writer will tell you, you have to create stakes. So we had to create stakes, consequences, stipulations on wrestler A versus wrestler B. What are they actually fighting for? Yes, to win or lose, but what are they winning? And if they don't win, what did they lose out on?
Well, I really enjoyed this conversation with Conrad because I got to see a side of Jerry Jarrett that I had never really seen. Admittedly, Memphis and Tennessee wrestling is not my era of pro wrestling. I'm 28 years old, so I've had to go back in time. And you hear all the stories. We listen to Something to Wrestle, and a lot of our fans probably know Jerry Jarrett as the chicken salad guy. But I think that this conversation really unearthed the depth of his experience and his knowledge. Obviously, you're biased having grown up around it, but what do you feel your father's single greatest contribution was to wrestling that we're still feeling the ramifications of today?
That's really hard, and obviously I'm his son. So, but, you know, the thing that I chuckled about, used to chuckle about, that, you know, Bruce and Conrad would have their fun, but the people that don't know, Jerry Lawler, Jackie Fargo, Dutch Mantel, any of my dad's good business friends inside of wrestling, they always sort of had some type of Jerry Jarrett impersonation.
Oh, okay. All right.
So it none of that really struck me as different. Now, Bruce is a great storyteller, and obviously they had their ups and downs in the relationship, but it took on a whole new life of his own on the chicken salad. And obviously my dad's Southern, and he's a storyteller, and he does. Maybe he's not the first, but he certainly knows how to get granular as well. but that type deal, my dad's nickname in the territories was Little Man. They called him Little Man because he's not the, you know, 6'5", 6'5". But there was always a unique, I guess there was a respect factor that you know, he was Lawler's boss or Jackie Fargo, you know, and, you know, Jackie Fargo was a big star. And then, you know, over time, Jackie started working for my father. But during that whole deal, and it's hard to really say one contribution, but I think in a lot of ways, the weekly episodic, and I'm going to go back on that, you know, you can come up with stipulations, you can come up with different talent. You know, Jerry Lawler is still got a lot of meat on the bone, and he's been in the industry since the 70s. So, you know, my dad taking so much time with Jerry, look, they were a great team. They made a lot of money together. But so it's hard to say one talent. It's hard to say the weekly episodic. But I think if you really drill it down to John, and I thought about this because I knew you were going to be asking me, I don't say tough questions, but family-related questions and that, you know, the conversations – with Conrad and him featuring my dad, I'm super grateful that Conrad thought enough of the situation, because my dad is not he's a legendary, if you will, wrestling promoter, but you know, that's 40 years ago. So our ad-free family, a lot of them weren't even born during that time.
Sure.
So for him to respect the future, but I think if you have to drill it down to one thing, and I know this is a simple answer, but my father gave so many people, including me, opportunity. His biggest contribution is that he had no fear in taking someone that really couldn't chew bubble gum and walk a straight line if their life depended on it, and he would give them the opportunity to sink or swim. He had no problem sending a guy out on Memphis, Tennessee, who had never done a live interview, and he just believed in that theory. The only way to learn to swim is get thrown in the deep end. You're going to be okay, and you learn that way. But I think my father gave a lot of folks lots of opportunity, and Stone Cold, we've mentioned it on the podcast recently. Undertaker came up. I mean, we could go down the list.
Yeah.
So many people. Road Warriors came in, and I mean – no need to go into all the names on this.
Well, Jeff, in part two, we're going to go into those names, and I can't wait to do that with you, because you're right. There are so many, but I hear you entirely on that opportunity. There's so many times you can get an opportunity or you can try to create an opportunity, but it takes that synergy in order to make it happen, and your father was certainly a huge part of that. And kind of wrapping up this element and this first installment of our sub-conversation here on Tennessee and sticking with your father, the thing that actually struck me the most was I'm hearing all these stories and I'm saying to myself, man, this feels like a weird multiverse parallel to Jeff Jarrett's own run at trying to start promotions and get them off the ground, multiple different attempts that you've made over the course of your career. His journey just attempted to expand the spheres of influence in Tennessee, and I would like to know what lessons did maybe you learn from him in your attempts at doing that? Like, I love the story of him just marching into Channel 5 and saying, I can get you Lance Russell. I'm going to make you the number one rated television station if you take a chance on us. I imagine you had to have similar conversations with that in your pursuit of television with your respective promotions.
You know, when you touched on that, I'm sitting here thinking about great contributions and stuff like that. But my dad, you know, in those days, it was a barter deal at best, but he went into Channel 5 in Memphis with all those great ratings and said, look, we're in business together, whether you believe we are or not. And so I want to start getting paid. That Channel 5 in Memphis, Tennessee, paying the promoter to produce content, that was kind of unheard of. It was barter, or we're going to pay to be on. There were a lot of different scenarios. So with that being said, I learned at a really young age, long before I had my first match, how much my dad valued the relationship with the decision maker at the network, at the TV station. If I learned that by osmosis, and certainly dealing with Spike and dealing with networks around the globe and my, you know, network career, if you will, the, you know, wrestler, promoter, but dealing with networks and the executive producer role, the you know, he who writes the checks writes the rules. I'll never forget that mentality, that there's a real lesson to be learned there, that you never, ever take the network for granted, ever. And he really hammered that in my head just by observing how he dealt with Channel 5 in Memphis and other stations, Louisville and Nashville and all that kind of stuff. And I certainly took those lessons at heart when I dealt with networks around the world.
Isn't it wild to think that Memphis wrestling, Tennessee wrestling is doing like Super Bowl caliber shares in the region at that time. And it helps put into perspective how gigantic this whole endeavor was. And I'm so excited because we're going to have a part two of our conversation where we're going to talk about those stars that you were just discussing. And I can't encourage you guys enough. If you haven't watched the conversation with Conrad, with Jerry Jarrett, part one, it is available now in the Ad-Free Shows archive. Go check it out before you get to our part two, because we got a part two of the conversations with Conrad coming as well. Just incredible stuff that you get here on adfreeshows.com. We appreciate your support. Jeff, I can't wait to talk about the Stars of Memphis with you. How about we take a break and we'll come back and chat with our fine friends here about who made Memphis and Tennessee wrestling as big of a deal as it remains today.
Looking forward to chat, my friend.
Guys, stick with us. We'll see you next time.